This past week, I had some in-between time at kind of the end of the day, late afternoon, and so I found myself on the Heights, and I was trying to duck into a coffee shop that I haven't been to a lot. So I went there and went up to the counter, and there was a barista there, and I did something that I normally do not do. I just don't do it. I don't think it makes any sense, but it was kind of late in the day, and it was cold, but I didn't want to stay up late, so I ordered a decaf Americano. I ordered decaf Americano, so just bring it to me, I'll have it there. So I put my order in, called my name out, went and got my decaf Americano, went down, sat down, pulled out my laptop, pretended to work. No, I was actually working, and I was going through some stuff, and I realized I had to get on the World Wide Web, the internet, and I did not know the Wi-Fi password. So I went up to the bar there and saw the barista. I said, hey, can you tell me what's the Wi-Fi password? And she pointed to the sign. She goes, it's right here. Decaf is the devil. And luckily, I was kind of having some self-control that day. Usually, I was thinking as I went back to my seat, well, I sure wish you'd have told me that before I ordered that and drank half a cup of devil, right? I mean, yeesh. But anyway, hold on to that cup of coffee, because today I want to talk to you about really different forces, if you would, that often push against us. We've been talking about how do we know, grow, and go with God, but to do that, many times there are things pushing against us, and a lot of times we find ourselves in a place of darkness, in a place of confusion, and a place of great pain. Now, I have in my hand here is a letter, correspondence from two of the most influential leaders in the 20th and now the 21st century. They've affected so many, literally millions of people around the world. And there's some insights in some of these letters I want to share to you that I find quite fascinating, and I think can provide us some help along the way in our life and in managing the life that we have. So we'll get to this letter in just a little bit. So we've been looking at, as you know, like I said, forces that push against us. We've basically been asking the question on a big level, what's wrong with the world? Why is the world so messed up? Why is there so much war and pain and murder and craziness and chaos? And not just why is the world messed up, really, when it hits you, we start asking, why am I messed up? Or why is my life messed up right now? Why am I dealing with this pain and these problems and this pressure that I can't seem to fight my way through? So, we had the chalkboard, if you remember that. We talked about our origins. How do we get here? And how do we get in this big old hot mess that we're in right now? Remember, we talked about how there's some secret cords up here. They're trying to trip me up here. So we talked about how there is a creator, you know, who is God. And there's a distinction between the creator and the creation, us. And we know that God made us, and he made this universe, he made the world, and he made us in his very image, okay? So, and when he made us in his image, we were designed to live a life that's contingent and dependent upon God. That's the way God set it up. God gave us, he gave Adam and Eve, he's given us this incredible blessing and potential curse called free will. Free will. Adam and Eve messed up big time. They chose to live their life independently of God, with their free will, and all kind of chaos broke loose. So you still have this distinction between the creator and the creation and man and woman, but now there's this barrier, if you would. There's this kind of built-in desire that we have that really wants to do our own thing. It's been passed on to us. We have a tendency to cheat, to lie, to steal. And if you don't believe that, just have yourself some kids, right? No one had to teach them how to do it. Think about it. You come out of the womb and you're just grasping. We're just made selfish, right? We just grasp all the way through. So we had this inborn nature to do that. A part of us wants God, but a part of us doesn't want God at all. We don't want to know God, grow with God, go with God. We don't want him. So we have this mess right here. So we have this tendency inside of all of us to want to do our own thing. The way I try to phrase it sometimes is that we live in a broken, fallen world with broken, fallen people who do broken, fallen things. So, and if you take just what, there are 8 billion people on the planet today. So just take those 8 billion people, if you would, and imagine a small snowball and think about the free will choices that 8 billion people have just right now on planet Earth, and how that's why there's so much chaos. That's why there's so much pain. That's why there's so much confusion. That's why there's so many wars. That's why there's murder. That's why all the chaos occurs is really because of free will. And that free will snowball has been getting bigger and bigger and bigger for tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of years, okay? So that's a little bit about how we got into this big mess. Now, it's interesting when you look at the story in the Bible of our origins. You have Adam and Eve. They have a perfect relationship with God. They're tempted there by the serpent, and then they fall, and now they have this brokenness and this tainted relationship with themselves and others, and things are a mess. And then in chapter 4, they decide to have kids. Let's just have some kids. That'll make us closer, Adam and Eve think. So they have a kid. They have Cain and Abel. And with, I don't know how long it took, but eventually Cain goes to war with Abel. Anger enters Cain's heart. Jealousy enters his heart and his mind. And it says that sin is like crouching at the door of Cain. And it gets up next to him. And Cain kills his brother. 2 kids, 2 boys, raised by the same parents, raised in the same way. Abel goes with God, grows with God. Cain, anger, jealousy, murder. It didn't take very long for the chaos, the pain, the destruction to be passed on, does it? Not very long. Carl Jung is one of the most influential and brilliant psychologists, psychiatrists that's ever lived. If you look at the 2 greatest psychologists, psychiatrists, you'd probably just say Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung. Carl Jung saw the human psyche like this. This is his take on what's happened to us, if you would, after the fall. Let me go get my chalk I left up here. By the way, for those of you who are like, you know, under 30, this is a chalkboard. For punishment, back in the day when you could actually punish people for doing things wrong in school, they would make people go and pound the erasers after class. I kid you not. And write on the chalkboard, I am a bad person, I'm a bad person. Can you imagine doing that today? Some of our lawyers are going, but we had a field day back in the 70s, wouldn't you? Anyway, sorry. Sidebar. Here we go. So Carl Jung, his understanding of the human psyche or what's going on inside of us is that we kind of have 3 parts to us, okay? First of all, we have a persona. And the persona is what you and I want to project to others. You know, I want to come across as, you know, educated, or I want to come across as, you know, good. I want to come across as I have it all together. I want to come across as however you want to come across. That's our persona that we project to the world. They're good aspects to persona and bad aspects to persona. And then you have your ego. And when Freud and Jung talked about the ego, they're not talking about, man, they've got a big inflated ego. No, they're talking about that sense inside of you, your will, your mind. The ego controls your yes and your no and your choices, basically. And then under the persona and the ego, you have the rot-row. You have the shadow side of yourself. Things and desires that are inside of you that don't match with your persona, And your ego doesn't know what to do with it, so it just kind of shoves down that shadow side. Or as Genesis called there in the Bible, the broken side. The propensity to do your own thing side. The rebel without a cause side. Does that make sense? So anyway, it's just an interesting way that he broke down looking at it. Now, he was, years ago, there was a guy by the name of Roland Hazard, and he lived up in the Northeast, and he was very wealthy. He came from an affluent family, multi-generational wealth. It was passed on to him. He was highly educated. He took that wealth and just was creating more. He had companies. He was influential. He had everything going on. Roland Hazard, also known as Roland H., he was the bomb.com, okay? But he had a problem, like a lot of us have problems. He had this shadow side right here. And his shadow side was an addiction to drinking. He couldn't kick it. He couldn't stop it. He went to the best doctors money could buy. He had it all. Doctors couldn't help him. He went to other people trying to help him. Finally, someone gave him the idea, hey, listen, there's this guy that's in Switzerland. His name is Carl Jung, and he's brilliant. He's probably the most brilliant psychoanalyst on planet Earth today. He's also a medical doctor. You need to fly over to, or get over in a boat, I guess, back in the day. Get over in a boat and get to Switzerland and meet with Jung. So Roland Hazard went all the way to Switzerland. He had the bank to do it. He spent a year, can you imagine? A year being psychoanalyzed and treated by the great Dr. Carl Jung. That would be like one of you guys here having a problem with your iPhone 10 and say, I got to fix it. Well, and then, you know, Tim Cook meets you, and then he takes you to Stephen Jobs' grave and resurrects him, and you get to meet with him. That's what I'd be like crazy, right? Crazy. But after a year of meeting with the great Carl Jung, Dr. Jung basically told Roland, I can't help you. I can't help you. I've done everything that I can in our therapy and understanding you and treating you, but I cannot help you break free from this addiction. It's hopeless. In a sense, I'm hopeless to treat you. Have a nice day. I don't know if you said that. I said that. So anyway, so Roland goes back to the USA, still addicted, still wondering what went wrong. What did go wrong? Why couldn't this great psychiatrist, psychologist treat and help Roland get free from this addiction, this shadow side that had kind of eaten his life up so much that it was threatening to kill him? What was going on? Was it merely this brokenness and fallenness, this shadow side that everybody has, this sin nature, as we say in the Bible? Or is there something else? When I was growing up, the great fear that I had, along with other Americans, was the fear of the Soviet Union and communism taking over the world. Anybody remember that growing up, fear of that? Raise your hands, old people like me, thank you, in middle age. Yes, it's a good thing. Don't buy a Harley, guys. All right, so here's the deal. So we were afraid of the Soviets. And the main thing that we were afraid of was what? It wasn't some war. We were afraid of the bomb. Thank you, the bomb, okay? So we knew that Russia, the Soviet Union, had the nuclear capacity to obliterate the United States with one press of a button. We also had the power to obliterate the Soviet Union with one press of the button. So back in the day, in the White House, there was a red phone, just like in the TV show Batman, there was a red phone connected from the White House to the Kremlin and Soviet Union, and they would discuss and talk in case one of us got an itchy finger and wanted to just annihilate an entire country. That's the fear we lived in, young folks. But we, in a sense, went to bed at night with somewhat a sense of peace because we had this thing called mutually assured destruction. took a course on that in college, mutually assured destruction. In other words, the Soviets knew that we could destroy them. We knew we could destroy them. So we had this kind of agreement. Does it make sense? Got it? Now, we knew our enemy. We knew what they were capable of doing. 9/11 hits. The towers are hit. The Pentagon's hit. Plane goes down in Pennsylvania. We don't know what the heck's going on. We don't know who our enemy is. We don't know if it's a country. We don't know if it's a group of people. We can't figure it out. Finally, we realize that it's a group of Islamic fundamentalist terrorists that are behind this, but it's much more of an ideology. And these particular killers are willing not only to kill themselves, we've seen that before, they're willing to kill fellow Muslims, fellow people who agree with them to get to their cause. Finally, we want to pin it on Osama bin Laden, who took credit for it, probably did it, but this ideology is bigger than he is. And he said this. He said, the difference between you guys and us is that you love life and we love death. So now, the fear, the global fear, and really an existential fear right up close to us that we have, or my kids have, is of this asymmetrical warfare we're involved in, where people might, you know, spring up in Sacramento, or spring up in Boston, or spring up at a military base in Texas, and start killing people and killing themselves. It's an enemy that we still really can't figure out. We really still don't understand. It's irrational. It's asymmetrical warfare. And that's where we live. What's behind all this? If you go back to the board, we see that even in the creation account, when Adam and Eve had that free will unbridled, evil, the power of evil is present. We know that Genesis 1:1 says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, but before the creation of the heavens and the earth, if you looked at Isaiah 14 and 15, you have another being, an angelic being with free will, who falls and wants to be independent of God, and there you have the existence of evil before all this began. Evil comes in to different lives, in different powers, in different ways, and starts affecting people individually and globally in a very powerful and dangerous way. Jesus said, the enemy, the devil, satanic forces came to steal, kill, and destroy. So if you look at the world on a global scheme, and if you look at certain aspects of your life on a very personal level, a lot of what's going on is because of invisible forces, true works of evil that are influencing, that are empowering, that are tempting us to go the wrong way. Now, let me say this. I don't talk a lot about the devil, about Satan, about demons. But I've worked in the helping profession long enough. I've talked to hundreds and literally thousands of people over the years. I have friends that are in the same business, whether they're a psychologist, whether they're an addiction treatment, whatever, and they will tell you, and I will tell you, that the demonic and the devil is real and unleashes unbelievable power in certain people's lives. That's the fact, Jack. C.S. Lewis, the great C.S. Lewis, said this. It's a good quote about balance. He said, "There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive, unhealthy interest in them, and they themselves are equally pleased by both errors and hail a materialist or magician with the same delight." So, I don't believe that everything is the devil's fault. I don't like to be around people who blame everything and their behavior on the devil. I don't believe there's a devil and a demon under every bush, right? You got to go demon dusting everywhere you go and cast and bind. I don't believe that. I don't believe that you can explain all the phenomenon we have in this world, the brokenness, whatever people are going through and problems, solely on the devil. And the solution is just cast that devil out and everything will be better. I do not believe that. This is a disclaimer. At the same time, I will be foolish, ignorant, stupid, really dumb, really dense, really slow. You shouldn't have said amen back there. But if I did not believe and see the power of devil work. Now, the envelope. What I have in this envelope is a letter. And I wish I had time to read you all the letter, but I don't. So, two of the most influential leaders in the 20th century and now in the 21st century, without a doubt, one would be Bill W. His name's Bill Wilson. He's one of the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. He has helped literally millions and millions and millions of young people, men and women across the world, get free of all kinds of addictions through the development he and Dr. Bob have of the 12 steps. Well, in about 1961, he was doing a kind of a history, trying to understand how the 12 steps developed. And so he wrote a letter to, there you go, Carl Jung, the great psychiatrist, psychologist who was living in Switzerland in 1961, to tell him about Jung's contribution to starting the 12 steps. So what's interesting in this letter is the person they're talking about, the way they have this connection is through our good friend, Roland Hazard. All right, remember Roland, the wealthy guy who couldn't get free, and Jung said, "You're hopeless." So Hazard goes back to the United States. He goes, I think it's in New York. He bumps into what's known as the Oxford Group. And the Oxford Group was an evangelical Christian group that met that preceded the development of AA. So it was there at that group that Roland Hazard eventually got free and broke free from his addiction. And there somehow Bill W. heard about his story, heard about his interaction with Carl Jung, heard that Jung told him, "Hey, listen, I'm hopeless, you're hopeless. Good luck," right? Basically. And Wilson was saying, "Hey, I want to tell you how much that led to the development of the first step, to admit that you're hopeless, to admit that you're broken, right? To admit that you need something greater than yourself." So anyway, they had this correspondence back and forth. And so Carl Jung writes Bill W. back a letter. Now, what's amazing about this letter from Carl Jung to Bill W. is this, is that when the rise of what we know as modern psychology and psychiatry was occurring in Vienna and also Switzerland with Freud and Jung, they were trying desperately to show that psychology, psychiatry is a science. It's a hard science, like biology and chemistry and things like that. So they were very careful in that. Now Carl Jung, it's 1961, like he's probably in his 70s or 80s, and he writes back in this letter to Bill W., about Roland H., Roland Hazard. He says this, "I'm strongly convinced that the evil principle prevailing in this world leads the unrecognized spiritual need into perdition." That's a fancy word for hell. "If it is not counteracted either by a religious insight or the protective wall of human community." Jung writes, "An ordinary man not protected by an action from above and isolated in society cannot resist the power of evil, which is very aptly called the devil. But the use of such words arouse so many mistakes that one can only keep aloof from them as much as possible. And the PS he signs to his letter to Bill W. is Psalm 42:1, as the deer panteth for the water, so my soul panteth after thee. How's that for hijinks? Carl Jung is admitting, hey, I believe in what I do. I believe in psychoanalysis. I believe in psychology. I believe in therapy. But there are certain things in this world, certain things in this life that I cannot understand, that are outside of us, that are universal, that is called evil. And there's another power we call God. There's another power that we need called community in order to protect us from all types of evil and chaos and craziness in our lives that we face. Jesus said, the thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy. Bill W. saw that. Carl Jung saw that. We've seen that. But Jesus came that we might have life and have it more abundantly. Jung said we need a counteraction. God sending Christ is the great counteraction. It's not just God displaying his love through Christ. It's God displaying his power through Christ. His power to deliver. His power, as predicted in Genesis 3, to squash Satan's head. His power to help us overcome the evil schemes and wiles of the devil. So, we have to be prepared. Sun Tzu, The Art of War, every battle is won before it's ever fought. Ephesians 6, I'm not going to read it, but Ephesians 6 says we have to be strong in God's power. We have to counter the power of Satan with the greater power, who is God himself. It's not a type of dualism here. Who's going to win, God or the devil? No, God's already won. But we have to claim and walk in that victory. Then in 1 John 4:1, it says, you are from God, children, because you have overcome them. Greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. So if we're going to prepare ourselves to face the challenges, the temptations, the schemes, the wiles of the devil, if you would, we need the greater power of God's life. We need this abundant life, this Zoe life, this God life to come inside of us and to dwell inside of us. We also need to put on God's armor as we go out through our days, the armor of God, so we can catch it in our mind. Cain didn't catch the anger. Cain didn't catch the jealousy. Cain didn't check the pain, and it developed until he wound up into a deadly place. So we need the full armor of God, and we also need the greater power of God's community. That's what we need. That's what you need. That's what I need. That's what we need every day. This mighty power of God. Greater is he that's in you, that's in us, than he's in the world. We need this armor in our minds to protect our minds, and we also need the power of a life-giving, authentic community. We can't live in isolation. We can't do it alone. We weren't designed that way. Maybe decaf is the devil. Just a substitute for the real thing. Bless you. Next week, we're going to talk about the one ingredient that we all need to go, to really go and grow with God. One ingredient, it's essential. That's next week. Pray with me. Father, I thank you. Thank you so much that you have called us out of darkness and into light. I thank you that, God, your power is greater than any power that has a grip on us. No matter how we look at it, if we look at it through, I don't know, psychology, if we look at it through sociology, if we look at it through your lens, your word, we know how great the need is in our world and our life. So God, I pray right now that during this time of invitation that you'll lead many here to stand and come down front and say, hey, I want to be a part of this community today. I don't want to live in isolation, or we as a family want to be a part of this community, or we as couples or singles or students, we want to be a part of this community. Not a perfect community, no. But a community that's seeking to understand and appropriate God's love and grace and truth. So Father, I pray for this time of invitation. You would lead those families and couples and singles and students to stand and come down front and say, hey, today we want to connect with this community. We want to join here and join hands with folks here at Second. God, may they stand and come down front today. This is our prayer in Jesus' name.